Grab the pasuk on page 112. Okay, classic Vav, page 112. Asas ani savishu ki Hashem machse. The counsel of the ani savishu. What do we mean over here with the words? The counsel of the ani. Let's look right away. Lashon of busha, embarrassment. Let the mitzudas pasuk vav atzas ani atem mevayishem atzas am ani shoymer batzosai hasher Hashem machsei. We're going back now to the wicked. The wicked are speaking, and the wicked they put to shame the ani. In this context, according to the mitzudas, the ani refers to Klal Yisrael. The Jewish people, in the eyes of the nation, the world, are called poor people. They're aniyim. They're lowly. And the Jewish people, whenever there's a tzara, what do they say? Hashem ya'azor. Hashem will help. Hashem will help us. Hashem, the Eitzah of Klali, so the Am Ani, is have faith. Don't worry. We're on page 112. For Mizmor Yudalit Pasik Vav. Page 112, Pasik Vav. Atzas Ani Savishu. The counsel of the poor man. Savishu, they put to shame, or you put to shame. Ki Hashem, what is their counsel? Ki Hashem machseyu. In other words, who is the ani? According to the mitzudos, the ani is Klal Yisrael. They are always in a state of loneliness and goes. And the attitude, the eitzah of Klal Yisrael is, don't worry. Whenever the world seems like it's about to fall apart, don't worry so much. There is a Ribbono Shel Olam, and he will help us, and he will get us through the situation. This attitude of the ani who says ki Hashem machseyu, Hashem will help him. Hashem will come to his rescue. He seeks refuge in Hashem. They put to shame. The world puts to shame. The world has a belief, the non-believers, that everything is in their hands, that their destiny, they are in control, and when the situation seems to be out of their control, they are miyayish. The world who does not believe in Hashem cannot deal with this mindset, this belief of Klal Yisrael that Hashem says that Hashem will help me. It's a very beautiful pasuk. Think about it. One more time, look at the mitzvahs on page 113 on the bottom. No, that's their attitude. Let's read the words. The ani is speaking about ourselves. Let's read the mitzvahs very precisely inside. Pasuk Vav on page 113. Atzasani, atem you. Who's the atem you? The goyim, our enemies, the non-believers. Mevayishim, you put to shame. Atzas am ani. Notice he adds the word am. The counsel, the attitude, the frame of mind of the nation that is poor. The word ani here refers to Klal Yisrael. She'oimer, he's adding some words to make it make sense. The poor men, Klal Yisrael, they say, ba'atzosai, in their counsel, asher, Hashem machseyu, Hashem will help them. Ki sichachashu loimar, you, the wicked, you deny this attitude by saying Ein Elokim. This pasuk vav is a powerful pasuk. In a few words, David HaMelech of here is coming to summarize the conversation, the difference of opinion as to an outlook on this world. Key goes back on the ani. Kasher. It goes back on the ani. He's summarizing here the different outlook that Klal Yisrael has in this world versus the nations of the world. This world is a dangerous place. At every moment there's correct. Kasher, that Hashem will be the one that will come to their rescue. This pasuk is summarizing the difference in attitude between Klal Yisrael and the Ummah Yisraelah. The world is a dangerous place. Every day, there's another situation where we think, oh no, the world is coming to an end. What are we going to do about it? So the Ummah Yisraelah are in a panic. They panic. They're in a panic. They're in a state of panic, and they They thought, people who came online, I want to apologize that my video is not working. I'm going to reboot during the break. In the meantime, we'll just use the sound. The people, the nations of the world, when there's a situation, a desperate situation, whatever it may be, they go into a state of panic and despair, or they try to take control. And Klal Yisrael has an attitude of, don't worry about it, don't worry so much, whatever will be, will be. Their counsel is Hashem will help us. We seek refuge in Hashem. The Umay Sa'olam, which are the vast majority, there are almost 8 billion people in this world, and Klal Yisrael is only about 15 million people, they look at us and they put us to shame. They say, you're foolish. You're foolish to think, to be so naive to think that nothing's going to happen to you, you're going to survive. You're going to survive all the dangers in this world. Okay, next pasuk yud. Mi yitein mitzion yeshuas Yisrael. If only it will come from Tzion, the salvation. We'll see the moment through the whole pasuk. Yeshuas Yisrael. B'shuv Hashem shavus amoy. Yogel Yaakov, and Hashem will return. Will restore the captivity of the Jewish people. Yogel Yaakov, Yaakov will rejoice. Yismach Yisrael. Pasuk. Let's see the mitzvah stuff. Pasuk vav. Pasuk zayin. Mi yitein halavai. Meeting over here means sounds like a yeshiva shaloshim. Today, it's considered yeshivish to say halavai. Right? That's not like a refined way of speaking. Right? The people are very refined. They never say halavai. It's a yeshivish sprach. Okay, but the mitzvah stuff it already uses meeting means if only it will be halavai. If only it will be that. Mitzion Yeshuas Yisrael, Mitzudas David, Halavai Shetavai Mehira Teshuas Yisrael Mehashaychein Bitzion. The word Mitzion is short for the one who resides in Tzion. Who is the one who resides in Tzion? Hashem. Hashem Shechina is resting in Tzion. If only Hashem will come forth from Tzion and will bring forth salvation for the Jewish people, how? The salvation will come b'shuv Hashem shvusam, and Hashem will restore the captivity of His people. Kibbutz Golias. When this will happen, Yogel Yaakov and Yismach Yisrael again back in the Mitzvah meeting. Halavai shetavai mehiro teshuas Yisrael mehashoychein b'tzion from Hashem b'shuv be'es asher yashkit Hashem es b'nei Hashem. Hashem will put to silence. Ritzon Eloimar she'enikor lakol asher. Hashem hishkitam. It will be noticeable to all that Hashem has silenced them. Okay, so here he's saying something very interesting. See, the word is the shavus amoy means silencing. The shuv Hashem when Hashem we normally translate the word shavus mean the captivity, the exiles. Here he's saying over here shevi. That's what it says over here also in the mitzvah siyim. When Hashem will restore the captives. The Shevi, the captive. So the Mitzvah's David, though, he says something a little bit different. I'm not sure, you know, how you reconcile these two because it's the same person. Be'ez asher yashkit Hashem es b'nei hashavim. And Hashem will silence the captives. Ritzon Eloimar, she'nikol hakol asher Hashem hishkitam. Hashem has given them peace. Yeah, okay, we have to look, we'll see a little more. Yogel oz yismichu ki hitzlichu mi'atzos, and then they will rejoice because Hashem has brought them success. At this time, in time of Mashiach will come, the Goyim will say about the Jewish people, you are right. You are correct. Your attitude, your frame of mind, your, what's the fancy German word, your Weltanschauung. Your Weltanschauung, your world outlook, your world view. The Jews have a very different Weltanschauung than the Goyim. The Goyim think everything's under their control.
Judeo-centric.
What?
Judeo-centric.
Judeo, so what do you mean Judeo?
You mean everything
revolves around the Jews?
Judaism.
No, not only. I don't mean that. It revolves around Hashem. That the Jews have an attitude of everything is in Biyat Hashem. When you allow into your life a degree of emunah, everything is different. Everything is different when you believe fully. Everything is under your control. You see, the communist country, we have the Olympics. It's very, very interesting. The Olympics now is in China. In all places, Ashkaka Prakas is the worst time. China, every two years, four years, they have the Olympics in different parts of the world. They bid all over. This is like the worst place to have the Olympics. in Cologne, during Cologne, right? The worst place. And you read some of the horror stories, even people from other countries. Every country is different. Read the news of the mahalik of every country of dealing with this matzah. Some countries are more lenient, some more machmir, this and this. It's the worst thing. There, if someone, an athlete that goes there today, I read, has to be tested, not only out, everyone, 2 PCR tests daily. You have to get tested twice, 2 PCR. The full up the nose. They're sticking the thing up the nose. Some of them, you know, they do it in a deprived way, in the Beis HaKise. They take samples from the Beis HaKise for testing. It's very humiliating. And an American or people in other parts of the world, it's very humiliating, twice a day. And if you're positive, you're finished. They send you out mamash to a quarantine camp. It's unbelievable. China, I know some. What? People from other countries are not accustomed to this. They're not accustomed to this. Question is why? Why are they so machmir? I don't know. Is it everyone different strokes than folks? I know someone who worked in China. This goes back pretty well. He worked in most of the year he was in China. Most of the year he worked at factories and manufacturing products. And when he would come back, we would always ask him, my father would ask him to talk to him, Shalom Shus, tell us about your experience. What are the people like? Tell us about the religion. I don't know. I don't remember where he went.
He used to sell Hong Kong, and they get now trailers every couple of weeks. They get trailers of food because they have businesses.
Could be. Now, maybe that's more now. But we would ask him.
When he first flew on one of the hotels, so the kid was every
Because
he's going back to Pasuk Vav. In Pasuk Vav it says Atzas Ani Savishu. Savishu means to put to shame. How do you put to shame somebody? You insult them. The word Tavishu, he translated in Pasuk Vav to mean to put to shame. The way you put someone to shame is...
The other nations of the world
are going to be silent. Are going to be silent. Are going to be silenced when there will be a
rebel.
What?
The other nations of the world are going to be silent.
Correct.
No, but this is Shovel, the ones
when Hashem will restore when the captives, the captivity of his nation,
then it will be
a revelation. Hashem will reveal himself, and then all of the nations that insulted and put us to shame, they will be silenced. The Mitzudah is bringing together the Pasuk Zayin and Pasuk Vav. So he told me something here. This person went there, and there's only one opinion. I can't speak anything else. He says that there's no religion in China. The people that he dealt with, he can't speak for everyone. I really have no clue what I'm saying. I'm just telling you what he told me. This person, he's a very intelligent person. He spent a good part of the year in China. I haven't seen him in many, many years. And he came only back with very short periods of time to America for the Yom Tov, whatever it was. And he would say that he deals with people in China. That's where he lives, in business, Goyim. And he tries to talk to them about religion, about God. And he says the vast majority, they really don't understand. They're literally robots. The people that he deals with.
It's China. So what's the China?
I don't know, even if you're, just because you're a communist country doesn't mean that people don't have a natural inborn recognition there's a God. People, I mean, it's a communist, so just because you're a communist country, you know, every human being is a creation of God in a certain sense. So he says they just don't get it. They don't connect. In America,
that's a very good question. Is it an
but when they brainwash you, when they work on you from the whole society, the whole society is built on denial of God, if that's true, I don't know, then maybe, even if it's true that a person has an inborn recognition of God, if someone the entire day is brainwashing you that there is no God, obviously, what is the product? The result is you don't believe. And he said, it's very disturbing. You go in America, you go talk to anyone, you go talk to a non-Jew. Someone on the train, you deal with non-Jews all the time in the workplace. A lot of them are very religious. They are very religious. They have maybe a very corrupt religion. Some of their ideas are very, very strange. Some of them are maybe too religious. I once had a UPS guy drop the package, so he didn't let me go. He starts darshing and talking about Tanakh. Varvin, he knew Tanakh better than anyone that I know. He's darshing about God and this prophet, that prophet. And he was going on and on and on. I said, you know, I got it.
Is that George the UPS guy?
What?
George?
No, it was years ago. Maybe, I don't know. The guy was going on and on. There are people out there, going in this country, if you talk to them a little bit, you get a sense, many of them at least, they have a hakara. We live in a goyish society. There is a hakara, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, they have obviously very strange ideas, and there's been a lot of problems, but to go to a society where people literally are robots?
But we have the concept
of Tinnik
Shemishba. No concept of
God. I don't have no concept. What do you mean? Tinnik Shemishba, let's say even you have a Tinnik Shemishba, a Jew. He doesn't know what God is. Of course he knows what God is. He's just not observant. He doesn't do the mitzvahs. But he has a certain sense, if you talk to him about God, he can have a very nice conversation.
But maybe they're brought up in a society where if they talk about God, they think someone's trapping them and doing...
Could be. I don't know. I really know nothing about it. But the way this person explained, he said, he presented a situation, a society, and I don't know if this is true for where exactly he's referring to, where people literally... They don't have any concept of there being a God. And when you live in such a society, then when let's say you're dealing with a sakana, a pandemic, then it makes a lot of sense. What you do. Twice a day, you get a PCR test. If you're positive, so you're eliminated. Are they human rights? So we'll put you somewhere in some remote place and no one should know about you. And it creates an entirely different mindset. When a person has a hakara, there is a God. Okay, it's sakonis nefashas. It's sakana, but it changes the entire equation. So what can happen if a person dies? So you'll die. You'll go to Olam Haba. There's another world. Now, you don't want to die. You're supposed to live. The purpose of this world is to live, not to die. But it definitely changes the dynamics of how you deal with pikuach nefesh. It changes it in an entirely different way. It's very interesting to look at the countries of this world and see how everyone is different. And no one can say who's right, who's wrong. No, I mean, no one, whatever, you'll tell me this, that, I'm not here to talk politics. But you look at this world, and every day you read, in this country, this way, in this country like this, this country like this, even in this country itself, in this state, you do like this. In this state, they do this. In this state, they do this. The people in control have a very different approach to something that no one knows what to do. No one has, it's not black and white what to do. And when you bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the picture, it changes the dynamics. And here, you're dealing with a general casual attitude towards life, purpose, and the whole world has basically one approach, and Klal Yisrael, 15 million people versus 8 billion people, have a very different approach. And when we add into our equation HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Emuna, and the Hakara that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not put us into this world to cause us pain, and there's a reason for everything, it's somehow, I don't know how, but somehow it changes the attitude and the approach to dealing with problems relative to the goyim, who have a very different understanding of Hashem, if they have an understanding of Hashem at all, and they deal with it in a very, very different way. And when they look at us, they think that we're crazy, and they put us to shame. And when the day will come when the world, Hashem, will reveal himself, and then we'll look back in history, let's say the last 2,000 years, a Jew's attitude towards life, towards purpose, towards everything about this world, they will be put to shame. They will realize that when you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your pocket, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your heart, then your attitude towards life, towards the purpose of this world, takes on an entirely different dimension and a different approach. Mi yitein, if only it will be Mitzion, the one, the God that lives in Tzion, that rests his divine presence in Tzion, he will bring forth Yeshuas Yisrael, salvation for the Jewish people. Beshuv, when Hashem will restore, he will return Hashem Shavus Ami, the exiles. Hashem will bring about conditions where Klal Yisrael will once again return and live in Eretz Yisrael and observe the mitzvahs. At that time, the Goyim will come to see the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they will be silent. Their insults and their attitude towards us will completely change. And when that will happen, Yogel Yaakov, Yismach Yisrael, we will be vindicated and we will rejoice. It sounds like, you know, a dream, what we're saying over here. But this is going to happen. It's going to happen over here. And that's the way the Mitzvah learns this Mitzvah. Okay, so we've gone to the entire Mitzvah according to the Mitzvah of it. Now we have to go back and do it according to Rashi. Let's go through the Mitzvah according to Rashi. Let's start again, back on Pasuk page 108. Begin the Mitzvah, L'matzech, L'david, Amar Nevo, B'livoi, Ein Elohim. Hishchisu, Hisidu, Alila, Ein Oiseta, Rashi. Rashi, page 108, Amar Nevo, B'livoi, Shnei Mizmoirim, Amar David, B'sefer, Zeb, B'inyan Echad. Harish Nadavuchanet. So that's what the Mitzvah David said. V'yasheni al titus harasha, Zenis Nabi al Nebuchadnezzar, Shaosid Likonis Lechel Lachrivoi, Ve'ein Echad Mikol Chayoloisov, Moiche Biodoi. No one in his army protested. Remember, we learned over here that the Endorish is known to make Samacha. So Rashi over here is spinning the pasuk a little bit differently. First of all, Rashi begins with our introduction we spoke about last week, that there are two Mizmarim in Tehillim that are almost identical. Mizmar Yudalit and Mizmar Nun Gimel. They're almost identical. In Mizmar Yudalit, we use the name Elohim, whereas in Mizmar Nun Gimel, there, instead of Elohim, the word Yudke Vavke appears much, much more often. And why are there two Mizmarim? So Rashi says that this Mizmar is a prophecy regarding the Churban Bayis, Rishon. And Mizmor Nun Gimel is a prophecy regarding the Churban Bayis Sheni. And therefore, this is regarding the Churban Bayis Rishon, the players. Here are Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradan, and the Nevim at this time are Yirmiah and Yechezkel, and the king is Tzidkiyahu. We're dealing with all the whole cast of characters that existed during the time of the Bayis Rishon. So who is the novel? Who is the lowest of the low? Who is the Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar says, Ein Elohim. There is no Elohim, and therefore he gives the order to proceed and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Now Rashi over here, this is something that's a little different than what the Mitzvah does. And he says, he continues the narrative that we're dealing with the Churban Bayis Rishon and with the Nebuchadnezzar. And what it says over here is, Hashem Yisrael Hishkef al-Bnei Adam Lewis Hayesh Maskil Doresh Es Elohim. He learns, that refers to Nebuchadnezzar's people. That Nebuchadnezzar, incredible Rashi over here says, that Hashem over here is having, according to David's understanding, Hashem has a complaint why no one amongst his own people stood up to Nebuchadnezzar. According to the Mitzvah of David, the Pashup Shad is dealing over here with us. We're talking about over here the Churban Bayis, Rishon. And Klal Yisrael, we're doing, why did the Churban Bayis Rishon happen? Avodah Zarah, Gil Yarei, Shvich HaStamim. And the question is, how come no one in Klal Yisrael took a stand and gave Musa to the people, cut out the nonsense? Stop the Shvich HaStamim, stop the Avodah Zarah, stop the Gil Yarei. Now you'll say they did, they were the prophets. Okay, but the prophets were few and far in between. Amongst the people, the common man, there was not a significant number of people who took a stand and said, let's listen to the Navi. If the Navi is telling us in the name of Hashem that there's going to be a Chumash HaMikdash, if we don't cut out the nonsense, how come there were not a few good men that took a stand and made an acha and said we have to listen to the prophet. This is seemingly the way the Nitzivus Tov understood the Psha and the Pasuk. We're not dealing with the enemy. The enemy is the enemy. Enemy, they're the Meshugai. They're all crazy. They're going to kill us. Why are they going to kill us? So let's look at the spiritual reason. It's because we're doing Averos. How do we know it's because we're doing Averos? Because the Nevi'im. There's Yirmiyah, there's Yechezkel, and before that there was Yitreyosar, and there was Yeshaya, and they were warning us. Don't we have a few good men in the community that are willing to stand up and make a macha and tell the people it's time to behave? That's the simple understanding. According to Rashi, it's not the pshat. We're goners. Forget about us. Let's look at the enemy. How come no one in the government amongst Nebuchadnezzar's men? Nebuchadnezzar could not do this alone. Nebuchadnezzar needs a coalition. He needs generals. He needs lawmakers. He needs a police. He needs people to help him. How come no one amongst his group, his team, said, you know, took him to the side, you know, it is not such a good idea. It's not such a good idea. What?
They go out of history. People stand up, they're gone.
They're gone. So maybe it's worth it to be gone. Better be on the side. You're waiting for Nuremberg? Following orders? Is that what you're waiting for?
Not a matter of better or not better.
You have a choice. It's terror, okay? It's terror.
Same,
okay.
He didn't stand up, and he was afraid.
Aaron, did they kill Hur, stood up, and he was murdered.
I go back to God. He made it our nature not to stand up.
Okay, so you're saying very good, and I agree with you. But we have to appreciate that if this is the way Rashi learned Pshat in the Pasuk, it means we may not understand. We don't know the history, the details. If there is a complaint, it means there were opportunities for people to make a macha on their level. Obviously, you get to a certain point, you don't have a choice. I don't know if that's an excuse. Okay, in Nuremberg, that's what they said, right? The Nazis, we don't have a choice. And that's not an excuse. But obviously, if the Pasuk here, according to Rashi, is complaining, why didn't you stand up to Nebuchadnezzar? Obviously, we don't know the history, we don't know the details, the story in its old details. There were opportunities for people to make a decision and to protest and tell Nebuchadnezzar, we're not doing this, and nothing would have happened to them. Why did they go along with this from the very beginning? Hashem over here is angry. That's how Rashi learns on the Pasuk. And this is what the complaint, if this is a complaint, then obviously it's valid, the complaint. There were opportunities. We don't understand. We were not there. We don't know how this...
That nothing would have happened to
them. We don't know that. But we have to have emunah that if, according to Rashi, Hashem has a complaint against them, obviously it means there was an opportunity at some point in time for them to stand up to Nebuchadnezzar.
The Babylonian soldiers themselves?
Yeah, read the Rashi. Let's read the Rashi. What is it over here? So Rashi over here, one more time, we'll get out. Shneim is ma 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 da vsebez zebinyan echad. Harish na Nebuchadnezzar. V'yasheni al titos. Harasha. Zen is nabe. This mizmar is referring to Nebuchadnezzar. She'asid likaneis laheichol. He would enter into the Beis HaMikdash, into the Heichel, ulehacharei v'yayin, to destroy it. Ve'ein echad mikol chayoloisav. There was no one amongst his soldiers, his generals, his army, moiche yado, who protested. They could have said to Nebuchadnezzar, this is not a good idea. You did enough already. You conquered Yerushalayim, you killed everyone, don't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And Hashem is complaining, ein elokim. There is no. What does the novel say, believer? What does the Nebuchadnezzar say? The Nebuchadnezzar says, he quotes the pasuk, "Ele al bomosei of." This is a quote from the Nebuchadnezzar. The Nebuchadnezzar said, "I will ascend upon the highest place." Bomosei of means the place that's in the cloud. Bomosei of, boma means a platform. Of means exalted. An exalted platform, referring to the Beis HaMikdash. Hishchitsu, his evil alila, ma'alolim. Okay, they've destroyed. They've done abominations. Ma'alolim means deeds.
Hisivu, he will read, just tells him the word Hisivu, b'sha'ayin mischalef ba'alef, loshon ta'ava. The word Hisivu, he learns not like, I take it back, this is not like the mitzvah, he is a disagreement between the mitzvah David and Rashi, very clear disagreement. The mitzvah David, we learn, says, loshon ava to'eva. The shosh of the word is a to'eva, an abomination. They have committed abominations. Rashi says, no, the abomination, the word alila, and the word his evil really should have been spelled with an aleph, and the aleph and the ayin are interchangeable, and it means tava. They have had a desire, a passion to commit crimes, to commit genocide, to destroy Hashem's Beis HaMikdash. The machlokes between Rashi and the Mitzvahs is the word to'eva, an abomination, and alil is just a verb. They did, they committed. They committed abominations, or just the opposite. Just the opposite. The word alila is the abomination, are the acts of evil. And the word hisiva, they enjoyed it. They had a taiva. They enjoyed doing harm. Next, hakol sar. Now we go to the next, then we go to the next pasuk. We do this list. We read the pasuk. Hashem ishmam hishko Hashem. From heaven he looks down, al b'nei adam, lira is to see hayesh maskil. Hashem is, according to Rashi, Hashem is looking upon the b'nei adam, referring to the enemy, looking upon the evil empire, Nebuchadnezzar and his mercenaries, the Kastim, Anon, Moav, all the nations of the world participate in this mission. There's a coalition, the evil axis. They all got together. Amon, it says the Farish, Amon and Moav, they hired Yishma'elim, they were hired, they were mercenaries. Everyone came to join, especially the Kastim. The Kastim, it was Bavel, and the Kastim, everyone had to go paint the whole picture of what the world looked like at that time. Each nation was probably very similar to today. The more things change, the more they stay the same. You look at the whole map, like today you go look what's going on in Russia and Ukraine. What's going on exactly? Mi hu zeh ve'ezeh? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? They're all bad guys, they're all good guys. What's this? What's going on? Who's fighting? Who's doing this? It's a big concoction, a whole, it's very hard to, it's the same thing. The time of Chumash HaMidosh. You have independent states, independent nations, but they all came together in one big coalition to destroy Klal Yisrael. And there wasn't even one vote in the United Nations of the time of Nebuchadnezzar that voted to condemn Nebuchadnezzar for aggression, for crimes against humanity. Not even one member state voted not to do, that this should not be done. It was unanimous, which goes to show, that's what it is. Hashem Yishram Hishkev Al Benayim. Hashem is looking at the United Nations. Lirois, to see, is there even one member state? Lirois Hayesh Maskil. Doresh es Elokim. Okay, how many member states are there in the United Nations? I think 167? So I think that today there are 167 member states. And then when they condemn Israel, they all join. They don't even know what Israel is. They don't even know, they interview somebody's head of state and they say, why did you vote to condemn Israel? What did they ever do to you? Well, the other member states felt it was a good thing to do. Obviously, it's the right thing to do. What kind of crazy nonsense is that? It goes to show the power of peer pressure. Okay, you want to kiss up to your neighbors, so you just rubber stamp whatever they want to do. It's unbelievable. Hashem looks down.
They want to stay in good grace with their neighbors.
They want to be. They said, oh, could keep it. What do they care about Israel?
Yes, no, but if my neighbor says do this,
so that's what you do, exactly. That's what you do. This.
Bully.
It works the other way also.
The bully always win.
The bully, yeah, absolutely. The one who makes the most noise. That's right. But by the time people stand up, it's too late. It's too late. It's very true. They have. I was watching. It was a while ago. Again, I'm not going into politics. I'm not even thinking which country. It's a country where they had draconian laws of lockdowns, mandates to an extreme, and the police came to enforce the rules. So they interviewed the policemen, and they asked him, "Do you really believe in this? Do you really believe what you're doing over here is the correct thing?" So he basically said, "I don't. I would really be, if I wasn't a policeman, I would be with you, I would resist. I would be non-compliant. But listen, I got a wife, I got kids, I got a job, and I don't have any choice. I don't have any choice. And he had to hide himself, because if he would be caught saying this, he would lose the job in a second. So it's very interesting, just because people do things, many times they're just pushed into following orders. There's a higher authority that is so powerful. Don't underestimate the power of the government. The government has incredible powers. It's frightening how much power the government has. And you don't fall in line, and even though you disagree, you're in a lot of trouble. So here, Hashem over here has a complaint against all the nations. How come there's not even one nation over here? Next pasuk, Hashem is trying to look. Next pasuk, Gimel. Hakol sar yachtav. According to Rashi, we're referring over here to the Umay Sa'ila, not referring to Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people who are corrupt. According to the Metzudos, all of this pasuk referred to the Jews. The Jews have acted in evil ways, have done terrible avos. And no one makes macha, no one wants to do teshuva. According to Rashi, we are discussing the goyim, our enemies. They all are united to bring upon us harm. Hakol so yachtov together. Nelochu, nelochu we learn means they have destroyed. They have destroyed. It's similar to the word hishchitsu. They've nivashu. Nivashu is they have committed like rotten. Rather, they've committed horrible crimes. Rashi says over here, "Ein Elokim yeshchitzu siva lila ma'alol." We did it already. Hakol sar ein ish bechayol loisav moicher biyadei. See exactly what he said before. He reinforces the idea. We are describing Nebuchadnezzar. There's not even one soldier that makes a macha that doesn't believe in the mission. Is that one soldier that has to be court-martialed for not following orders. Every single one is in line with, believes in the cause. Ne'alachu, nebchu lekilkol. Okay, so therefore, we see over here machleis in Rashi, and then it's a hard word, obviously. The word ne'alachu is a hard word. If we go back to the Mitzudos, we read this word ne'alachu, niv'ashu. Niv'ashu means ba'ush, it's like to rot. It's something that is disgusting, something which decays. According to Rashi, it means that they have done the people, because the Mitzudas started learning these certain reference to Klal Yisrael. The people have decayed; they become rotten. They've abandoned Yiddishkeit, and their lifestyles have become disgusting. According to the Rashi, we are not discussing the Jewish people, we're discussing the Goyim, and it has a different translation. He says, Ne'eloch, maybe it's similar, Nehefchu Lekilkol. Similar, maybe it's not really different. They have all converted, they have all been transformed into rotten apples. Lekilkol, to bring about destruction. Next pasuk. Pasuk Dalet, Halo Yadu. Now we harash Halo Yadu called Parley Oven, Oichle Ami. All of you practitioners of evil who destroy my people, like Ochlu Lechem, the same way you eat bread, just indiscriminately, without any thought, any feeling, you devour the Jewish people the same way you eat breakfast without any thought. Hashem loy koro. So we learned in the Mitzudos David, Hashem was giving Musar. It's not because it's your power, it's your ability to do so. We learned in the Mitzudos David, it's because unfortunately my people, Hashem loy koro, my people have not behaved. Hashem loy koro. They did not call out to me, they have sinned. That's why you've been given this ability to do so. But let's see Rashi. Rashi could be different. Halo yadu oichli ami, asher oichlu ami, asher nidmo. Lochem ka'ich lelechem, she'tamu tam ma'achol orev. You eat my people. In other words, when you destroy them, he's saying something very frightening. It's you enjoy it. You look at these pictures of the Nazis. They're always smiling. They show the Jews lining the pits, ready to murder them. They have their weapons drawn against them, ready to kill a Jew. And the Nazi has a smirk on his face. They enjoy it. It's like eating a steak, a delicious piece of bread. It's frightening what it says here. Oichlu oichle ami, asher nidne lohem, the wicked, the practitioners of evil, who devour my people appear to them, ke oichle lechem, shetamu tamachal orev. It's delicious. It's delicious to kill a Jew. They do with such pleasure. Then Rashi adds a word, shesoifam, you should know the day of reckoning is going to come. The day of reckoning is going to come. Now, if Rashi over here does not tell us, well, he's going to repeat himself, so let's go a little further. The day of reckoning will come when you'll be overcome with pachat. Sham shesoifam, sham pachadu pachat. Shenishtalem gimuloy libal shetzar. Your day of reckoning will come when now Rashi is describing over here Nebuchadnezzar. So go down 70 years later. 70 years later, the end of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar was the greatest grandson Belshazzar. When he was destroyed, his whole malchus was obliterated in one night by Modai, Daryovin Shamodi. Gemuloi Lebelshazzar, Binoi. The Gemul, the punishment will come to Belshazzar, his son. Livchoi Pachat. Kemosh Nemar, Adayin Malka. Zi yoihi, shenoihi, virayoini, yivahalune. The king, I know, I don't know what this means, I'm embarrassed, I forgot to look up this pasuk. He was the king is in the seven Daniel, we once learned Daniel, once upon a time. The king over the pasuk basically means over here, the king was overcome, he was still sitting there in the palace, and suddenly he was overcome with terror, and his knees banged one against the other. And when he saw the handwriting on the wall, Adayin Malka Ziyoihi Shinoihi Virayoi Noihi Yivahalune, the king was there and his thoughts terrified. I don't know exactly what those words mean.
Maybe talking about Belshazzar.
Right, Belshazzar, yeah. So he was terrified. His thoughts terrified him.
He died that night.
Then the Kitre Charitze Mishto Rayin. I don't know, the gnats of Charitze Mishto were untied. His bones, the joints of his bones were loosened. The Archuvosei, his knees, do lido noksha. It's a very popular expression. His knees banged one against the other. Okay, so basically what's over there is that in the middle of the night, when he realized that his end was near, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, was overcome with the most intense fear that man can have. Say Rashi here says something very, very important. When it says here in the pasuk, the pochadu, sham there, pochadu fochad, they were overcome with terror. Al minema, al bal shetza. When leil pesach, chatzay slav, vahiba chatzay alayla. When the handwriting was on the wall, and it says the handwriting on the wall said that the time has come. The measure is full. The 70 years is over. The reign of Nebuchadnezzar is over. His time is up. And now is the end, and all of you people are going to die. And right after that, he marches into the gate, Daryovesh Hamadi, and he wipes out the entire Melucha in one shot. There's an incredible write-up about this in the Kankan Journal. Unfortunately, I don't think they publish it anymore. I think they stopped publishing it. An incredible ride of how was it possible for Daryovesh HaMadi to just like that. They had watchmen. So he writes that before Belshazzar there was a queen. There was a woman who was a queen. They had all the records. And she did construction around the city. She created some type of moat. I don't remember all the details, but it was done to beautify the city, or it was done to fortify the city, and it turned out that what she did backfired and allowed Modai the most easy access. It was like Hashem was planning this in advance. This woman, this queen, she did some major, major project, incredibly major project, to do something for the city, which ended up being the tool that the enemy used to overcome this city in a moment's notice. She must have spent a fortune, all of the country's wealth, on this major, major project, which was basically, she rolled out the red carpet. By doing so, it backfired, so the enemy wiped them out in the middle of the night. And when he realized this, Baal Shem Tzar, he was terrified, his knees shook, and this is a fulfillment of the pasuk, Shom Parach Du Parachat Ki Elokim Midar Tzadik. It's interesting that in the Holocaust, you read these Holocaust stories, at the end of the war, these Nazis, when the Jews were liberated, so the Nazis were really scared. The Nazis, when they were liberated, they were scared of the Russians, and they were scared. They weren't scared of the Americans. They were scared of the Russians. They were scared of other. But so what did they do? Many of them, they took the uniforms. They took the shmatas of their own prisoners that they murdered, and they put them on.
Right.
And they made believe. The Nazis made believe that they were prisoners. So that the Russians shouldn't, especially the camps that were liberated by the Russians shouldn't kill them. And it didn't help, because anyone that didn't look like a skeleton, Jews looked like skeletons. The Nazis were well fed, nice and fat and plump. And as soon as the Russian realized that there was a Nazi was disguised in the shmatas of, you know, of the prisoners, they instantly shot them. They shot them. In fact, some of the prisoners themselves pointed them out. Some of the prisoners, you know, the Jews that were liberated, he's a Nazi. And on the spot, bang, bang, they killed him. And that's just a teeny, teeny dogma of what's going to happen at the end of days, obviously. It doesn't take away from what they've done, but it's fascinating. It's fascinating over here, even though they've committed this entire incredible crime, the day of reckoning will come. The day of reckoning will come, of accountability, and then they're going to suffer. Shampachal du pachat. Like we mentioned last week, this expression is unique because you don't find a double expression in Tanakh often. And when it says a double expression, it means an intensity we can't even begin to fathom. It says by Yaakov. Yaakov says that he made a shvua by Yeshua Yaakov befachad aviv Yitzchak. Yaakov only had pachat, but these people are going to have pachat pechodim. Sham pachadu pachad. It's a double expression. They're going to really be terrified of what's going to come upon them for their horrible crimes. Now, Rashi over here goes back, and he explains over here the words with more precision. Halo yadu, halo soifam yedu masha ol sabohem. Now again, this is not going to be halo yadu. The end will be yedu masha ol sabohem. Do you not know about the day of reckoning? What's going to happen to them? Oich le'ami zara shol debuchanetzar. So he's saying over here something very interesting. The Oich Le'am are not going to be the criminals themselves. Tzadik, V'raloi, Rasha, V'toyavlo, these Rasha'im, we don't know how this works, these Rasha'im are going to die a normal death. But their children will suffer in their place. You'll ask the question, how could that possibly be? Then we have a general rule of Lo Yumsu Avos Halbanim, Banim Lo Yumsu Avos, that the Avos, the children did not die for the sins of their fathers. No, it's a good question. I do not know. Chazal do say that if the children follow in the ways of their father, they enjoy, they relish what their father did, then they will be punished for their father as well. What that means, we obviously do not know. But Rashi over here is saying,
the Gemara said, the parent is the role model, so to speak, and that's what ends up happening.
But the child didn't murder anyone. It's still a question. Even though the parent is the role model, the children, they enjoy what their parents did, but the children didn't do nearly the harm that their parents did. Today, there are many neo-Nazis. There are many people that do, but these people, we don't have on record that they actually killed anyone. Their parents, their grandparents were mass murderers, and their children are very proud. They're very, very proud. So in our minds, in the system of justice today, are these people, even though they're very proud to be to what their parents did and they were showing, are they walking the streets? No one's putting them in jail. No one is locking them up because there's no evidence that they did anything. There's no evidence. So there's no evidence of anything. So therefore, they're allowed to roam the streets and do whatever they want. Oh, but they're proud of their parents who are mass murderers. What could we do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no. You're proud of your parents that were mass murderers? I'm going to give you what I should have done to your grandfather. How does all that work? No one knows how that works. That's not for us to understand. Oich Le'ami, Rashi over here says, is addressing the obvious question, that the people who actually committed the crimes did not suffer. They died a natural death. How many Nazis escaped? All these, you read all these books about how many, even in the United States, how many the CIA, when World War II was over, when the Holocaust was over, the Nazi scientists, they were recruited. All the countries, every country wanted them. America wanted them. Every country, Russia wanted them. They went out, they sent teams of people to go and tap into the brains, you know, to recruit these people to work for the other governments. These were Rishoyim Harudim. These are the people who designed, the architects, engineers, how the most efficient way to kill Jews. And these people were being recruited by the Russians, by the Americans, and by the British to come with a nice salary, with good accommodations, a new identity, to come into their country and to work for the country and develop technology for the country. Isn't it amazing? There are hundreds of stories of like this. Today they open up all the files in America also. America right here, the people in America, they give new identities to work in this country. So Rashi acknowledges that, Rashi says, these people themselves, maybe they lived out a good life for whatever reason, but their children, their grandchildren, they're finished. And that's exactly how the Nebuchadnezzar.
So they themselves were never punished?
Not in this world. How many Nazis died to live good lives? Good lives. How many Nazis? Who knows how many Nazis? How many of them escaped to Argentina, all over the world? We even got good jobs.
They're getting theirs now in the next world.
In the next world. So Yed Rashi says, Rashi addressed this question, Zaroi shel Nebuchadnezzar. It's not his own people, it's his descendants. Balshetzar, his children. Next, Ochlu Lechem, Asu Mishta.
Say on one thing, Rashti was his granddaughter. She was murdered, right?
She was the great-granddaughter. Rashti, right, and Chanan also, right, she was Kaveh HaShverish. Ochlu Lechem, Rashti over here is going to make a drasha. Rashti over here is making more, now he's going to the more medish. Ochlu Lechem, Asu Mishta. The lechem that we're referring to over here is the mishnah they made in Balshetzar after 70 years. He made a party. Balshetzar Malka, Avad Lechem Rav, a big party on the 70th anniversary of the rise of Nebuchadnezzar to the throne. 70 years have passed. Yir Miyon Yecheskel were wrong. Look, nothing is doing. The Jews don't stand a chance. He took out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. He got dressed up, this week's parasha. He got dressed up in the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. And he made a party. He was Ochlu Lechem, Hashem Loi Karohu, Loi Chashavuhu, V'loi Zochru, Niflo Oisav, V'noiro Oisav, B'mishtehem. According to Rashi, not like the Mitzvah of it. The subject of these words of the Hashem Loi Karohu goes on Mevuchah, it goes on Balshetzar. All of the participants in his party, Hashem Loi Karohu, they did not acknowledge the koyach of Hashem, that Hashem has always been with the Jewish people, and they made leitzanos, and they made a party to celebrate the demise of the Jewish people. V'nishtam shu b'kelav, v'rabbeseinu perishu, kol she'enu goyim. Now Rashi's going over here, going to a medrash. And this is, Rashi over here is going off into an entirely different topic. And he's saying something very, very frightening. V'rabbeseinu perishu, kol she'enu goyzel es Yisrael, enu toyim tam orev b'machola. Hear what it says? Wow. The only food that tastes good is stolen food from Jews. Anyone that does not have on his plate food stolen from a Jew, the food doesn't taste good. The secret ingredient of delicious food for a guy is that this food is stolen from a Jew. It's stolen wealth. Mayim ginuvim yimtaku. Al mi nemar? On the goyim. Mayim Genuvim. Kol she'enoi goizel es Yisrael, enoi toyim tam orev b'machola. Isn't that shocking what it says? Oichle ami, nid melchem ka oichle lechem. Those wicked people who devour my nation, when they eat, when they devour them, it's a meal, it's delicious. She'tomu tam machol orev, it's delicious. Their day of reckoning will come. Shampach the pachad. Shenishtalim gemul leval shetzar. He was killed. Ki elokim b'dor tzadik. B'dor shel yichonya shoyit tzadikim. Hashem, that generation, that was the generation of yichonya. That was a generation. Their day of reckoning came. The doyroi shel yichonya shoyit tzadikim. Now, this is a little bit difficult because yichonya went into godless 11 years. I don't really understand you. This is way, way back. Yechaniah went into Galus 11 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash. He went with the Chodosh VeHamasker, the Chodosh of the craftsmen, the Masker of the gatekeepers, which simply means that Nebuchadnezzar was afraid that the Jewish, the brains of the Jewish people will come up with a plan to prevent their capture. So therefore, he took all of the intellectuals into Golis first, Chayshu, the craftsmen, the people, the craftsmen, people who knew how to make weapons. You see in Israel, what does Israel try to do? You read this all the time. Who do they target in Iran? The scientists. Okay, the chief scientist of the Iran nuclear weapons program was assassinated. By who? They acknowledge it. If I'm not mistaken, the Israelis acknowledge they did. They killed him. They killed him. And they have their primary targets to take out are the scientists, the intellectuals who know how to make weapons of mass destruction. So Nebuchadnezzar had the same problem. He realized the Jewish people, they are some very smart people, and they know how to manufacture weapons. Those are the chorosh, the craftsmen. What is the maskir? The people who close the gates. What does that really mean? It means the defense department. The people who work for the defense of the country. The chorosh are the people who go on the offense, and the maskir are the defense. The Department of Defense. And there's the Department of the Offense. Has any country ever done a Department of an Offense? In Israel, it's called the IDF, Israel Defense Force. How come in Israel there's no the Israel offense to go on the offense, not on the defense? It's an edel term, defense. But every country, of course, has soldiers on standby to take preemptive strike. So the chorosh are the preemptive division of the military, and the masker are the people who specialize in defense, the shield of the city. That is the Peshuta Shel Mikra. The drasha of Chazal is the Chorosh HaMasker refers to the Talmid HaChachamim. Chorosh means a deaf mute. When a Talmud Chacham would give a shir, and the shir was over, people, their mouths were, they had nothing what to say. They were in shock to listen to such brilliance. They were like a deaf mute. They had nothing what to say. Maskir, after a Talmud Chacham closed the Gemara, he learned the sugya. There was nothing more to say. He mastered the sugya, and he shut down everyone. Anyone that could make a comment was silenced, was shut down when the Talmud Chacham would close the sugya. So according to Chazal, this pasuk means he brought down to Bavel the elite Talmidei Chachamim, because he realized that Jewish continuity depends on Jewish education. And if there are no Talmidei Chachamim to educate the people, then there's not going to be Jewish continuity. So you go from the Pshat to the Drash. The Pshat is the Nebuchadnezzar, he exiled the military. The military is the Chorosh, the craftsmen who produce, manufacture weapons. And he exiled the Masker, the gatekeepers, the people who specialize in the defense of the country. According to the Drash, the Nebuchadnezzar, he exiled the teachers, the Jewish leaders, the leaders of the Jewish people, Talmidei Chachamim, because that is what is needed for Jewish continuity. Hitler, Yimach Shmo, did the same thing. Okay, the Rabbanim, the Talmidei Chachamim, they were his prime targets. They were marked men. They were prime targets, the Rabbiner, because these people represented the Jewish continuity.
Also, the Germans rounded up all the Russians. They rounded up all the Polish scientists and
because the intellectuals, exactly. Yeah. So here it says over here, in this pasuk it says, Pachadu Hashem, now Elokim Bidar Tzadik. Hashem is in the Dor Tzadik, B'dor Shol Yichon Yashoy Tzadik. I'm not sure why over here how that comes into play, because over here in the Baal Shetzar is 70 years after, more than 70 years, it's 81 years after the Dor of Yechonia. Asher Hegla, Yerushalayim, in Magala, Asher Hegla, refers to Yechonia Melech Yehuda. Yechonia was 11 years before. Okay, so in any event, he's in the Dor Tzadik. Next words of Rashi, Atzas Oni Tov Yishu, Atem Oibim Sh'atz, you say, Sh'atzosom Shel Yisrael, Bosha Al Shehem Boitchem B'Hashem. It's exactly what it says over here in the Tzadik. That these people, these wicked people, they say that the Jewish people, their outlook on life, their Weltanschauung, Weltanschauung is shameful. How can you live a life and have faith in Hashem? No, whatever will be, will be. Obviously, you have to be, you have to do a shtaglus, you have to plan ahead, but the balance, the ability to be a little open and leave a little room for Hashem to enter into the picture, that is something that's unique to Klal Yisrael. The balance of where does hishtadlus end and emuna begin? Obviously, that's a world of a difference between a Jew and a non-Jew. A non-Jew doesn't have emuna. You have to be smart. You have to plan ahead. And you have to take into account every single possibility. A Jew, of course, there is a requirement to do hishtadlus and to plan ahead and be responsible. And haneg bohem mina derech eretz. But a Jew opens up, leaves a little, much, much more room open in his life to allow Hashem into the picture. Hashem will help. Hashem yazor. I know sort of went back, came when Eretz Yisrael just came back. So I said, what's doing in Eretz Yisrael? So he says, it's not so easy there for a lot of people. A lot of people have a hard time there. But they have a lot of emunah. They all walk around the street saying, Hashem yazor. Mark, do you find that to be true? Hashem yazor, not everyone has it easy. Hashem will help. There's more of this room. You go to a country where you don't have Hashem yazor, you're in a lot of trouble. What's going to be? What's going to be is, we're in a lot of trouble. That's what's going to be. Yeah, if you leave open in your life.
That's why you can write an insurance and can write checks without coverage.
Oh, because look who's here.
Hashem will cover it.
Boker Tov. Good afternoon. Good afternoon from Eretz, speaking about Eretz Yisrael. Okay, welcome. Welcome. Okay, let's finish up the Rashi. The Rashi over here says, Atas on the Israel, Atem, I remember, Shatas, and Shal Yisrael, Bosh, Al Shem, Ruch, Hashem, Ki Hashem, Machseyu, Ach, Yikrav Hayoim, the day of reckoning will come, Shayit and Mitzin Yeshua, Yishol, Le, Osid, Ve, Oz, Yogel, Yaakov, Yismach, Yisrael. All right, so according to Rashi, whatever we will do according to Rashi, Rashi over here learns his entire Mizmah's reference to Nebuchadnezzar. Rashi has been pretty consistent. Rashi over here says his entire Mizmah is referring to him. We have two Mizmahim. The Mizmah over here, Mizmah Yudalad verse Mizmah Nun Gimel. Over here referring to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, during that era, there's a cast of characters. Who are the cast of characters? Rashi says we have Nebuchadnezzar. We have Yechoniah, who was exiled 11 years prior to the Golus. And we have 70 years later, the end of Nebuchadnezzar, we have Belshazzar. Belshazzar, who was destroyed by Mordecai. And we know Belshazzar's daughter was Vashti, which moved into the next Malchus of Poras and Mordecai and married Achashverosh. These are the cast of characters. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking, are there any soldiers? Hashem Yashme, Hashem Yishmael Yehishkev al Bnei Adam. Lirois, Hayesh Maskel. Is there any member of this coalition in the time of Nebuchadnezzar that said to Nebuchadnezzar, you know, maybe it's not such a good idea for you to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? You realize what this place is. The Shechina is resting over here for 410 years. It was built by Shlomo, by David. You know, let's give you some good advice. Who are the advisors? You always go look around. Who's running the country? Who's running this country? Okay, it was very telling. You know, there was a press conference. They don't talk about the news too much. I listened to this what's her name? What's the name of the woman who's the spokeswoman for the President of the United States? Psaki. And they interviewed her on television. She says, how do you enjoy your job? So she says, she says, it's really an honor to work with President Obama. She said this 3 weeks ago. Right. It's an honor to work with President Obama. I mean Biden. What did you just say? 40 and slip. President Obama, he hasn't been around already in 5 years. What are you talking about, President Obama? What are you talking about? Where's Obama? Obama moved to Washington, you know that? He moved when Biden became president, he moved to Washington. Who picked Harris to be the vice president? They don't embarrassed to say it was President Obama's
Biden
pick. It was his pick. Many times he called the president. Who's running the country? Who are your advisors? Every head of state needs advisors. To tell you, no one person can do it on his own. How come that one member of his cabinet, Nebuchadnezzar, made a macha, told him, it's not the right thing to do.
Well,
and
HaKadosh
Baruch Hu,
like that.
No, I mean, if the Pasuk here is issuing a complaint, it obviously, there was an opportunity for them to make a macha. Hashem Yishman Hishkif al Bnei Adam, Liris Hayesh Maskil, Doresh Es Elokim. And the answer is no. There's not even one member of the cabinet. That's the way the Rashi learned the Pasuk. The Rashi learned.
They complained it.
Chayaloysaf.
His own ministers told him, come on, this is over.
No, it's the Rashi says, that maybe later.
By Paro.
Okay.
By Paro. He had ministers who complained to him. Karen Tedaki of Domitzrayim. What are we doing
right
here?
Now you're going to have to take this exact same thing. What's very important under the Prisha Rashi, because when we learn Mir Tashem Mizmar Nun Gimel, and you go look at the story there. There's a new cast of characters. There you're dealing with Titois Horasha. Titois dealing with the Romans. You're dealing with the different cast of characters. Titois, and you're dealing with Yochanan ben Zakkai, and you're dealing with the Bar Yoinim, and you're dealing with the Prushim, you're dealing with the Zealots, you're dealing with a whole different cast of characters. And then when you can go look at this Mizmor there, and then you can deal with retribution. When will the day of retribution come to the Romans? At what point in history are we referring to? Every single part of this Mizmor. Every part of this Mizmar is going to have to be reevaluated Mizmar and Gimel to appreciate when the day of retribution will come, when who is the one that Hashem refers to Lirush Hayesh Maskil Darius Shlokim in the journal the Tikkun the Kankan journal. Another article is a fascinating analysis of what exactly happened at the time of Titois. When Titois destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, he claims there, based on his research, that Titois at the very, very end did not want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And his army, his men, were out of control. They were barbarians, they were nutcases, bloodthirsty people. And at the very, very end, Titois decided, he entered into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he slashed the Pareches and he did an Aver in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he did terrible Averos and he killed too many people to count. 4 million, I think 4 million people died, I think, in the Bayesheni. They say 4 million people. But Titus did not want to torch the Bayesheni. He wanted to preserve it, to make it into a museum, to make it into a church. He did not want to torch it. And his men, his army, were out of control. They, on their own, decided to torch it. And he ran into the Beis HaMikdash to try to tell them to stop, not to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Not to destroy it. And it was already too late. They were out of control. They destroyed it. And that, see, now that detail that I read in the journal, I have to find it somewhere, that whole account, a very elaborate account describing exactly the sources for this whole story, that Titus at the end did not want to, they are in control, is very, very revealing when you look at this Rashi here, what it says over here. Because here, Rashi's focus over here is by Mevuchad Netzar, there's not even one person Vizenis Nad al Mevuchad Netzar, Sha'asin Likones Lahechel, Ulahacha Rivo, to go and to destroy it. The Ein Echod Mikol Chayoloisov Moche Biyodoi. Makes it clear as day by Nebuchadnezzar, he did want to destroy it. And no one protested. According to what the Kankan Journal claims, if it's true, is by Titois, okay, going over here 500 years later, the Bayesheni, Titois did not want to destroy it. And Titois himself was Moiche against his soldiers. Don't destroy. We're not making Titus into a tzaddik. Titus was a Rosh Merusha with all of the exponents you can possibly have. Titus entered the Kodesh HaKadoshim and stabbed it and did an Avera. We're not coming to make him, but Titus, he probably wanted to transform the Beis HaMikdash into who knows what.
So
to a brothel.
Purposes,
what?
So he wanted some evil purposes.
Fine, evil, but it's okay. So you want to say that's also called destroying it? I hear what you're saying. There's no difference.
It may have been worse.
Not to take down the structure, I don't know if it's worse, because if the structure is there, maybe there's hope one day you'll get it back. Maybe there's hope one day you'll get it back. I know that my great-grandfather, he lived in Poland, in Rysha, and I have a Google Maps, the exact address where he lived. I have right, and go look at it right now, live, street maps, the house where he lived. The house, the street, the house where he lived, his bedroom, everything, this is his house, he owns this house. Right now, it's a music, it's a studio, it's a little like a studio for music studio. So if I would go there today and knock on the door and say, get out of here. This is my great-grandfather's home. Get out of here. You don't own this. You murdered my great-grandfather. You took over his house. I can go on right now. I can show you right now online on Google Maps the house. Google, I go on the street. You know Google Maps. You go down the street, up this way, go that way, look at the roads. There's a car parked in front of the house. This is not your house. So if I had good enough lawyers and enough, I would go. I had someone that tried to do this once upon a time. He got nowhere. He just took from everyone in our family a lot of money to go fight the Polish government. To go and the whole thing turned out to be batul mevutul. There's no way to get anything back. But if there's the Beis HaMikdash is there, so maybe enough people will go and make a protest and lobby the government. They'll get it back. They'll get back the Beis HaMikdash.
You go to the United Nations, they'll help you.
Oh yeah, they'll help you. They'll help the other people. All right, in any event, this was Rashi. Now, there are a few some very beautiful Rashi, which unfortunately we're not going to do today. We'll still be able to finish today, but that we'll do tomorrow. We'll finish up this Mizmar, so we can go on quickly to Mizmar Tes Vav. So tomorrow we're going to spend one more day. We're going to spend one more day going through whatever we'll do tomorrow. We'll do, and that'll be it. One more day to go to some. There's some very nice things here in the Mefarshim. There's a very nice Malbim, a nice Mama Chazal, and we'll Mirchem finish up tomorrow. After the break, a very good topic. We want to talk about head coverings. Are you obligated to wear a head covering in the street when you eat? We learn from the Kohen Gadol. We have two head coverings this week, the Migba'ois and the Mitznefes.